The Guardian. What you're listening to is The Wizard of Oz, made in 1939. The Emerald City is in their sights as they gallop through a field of poppies. But then Dorothy collapses and falls asleep after the Wicked Witch has cast a spell on her.
What is it? I can't run anymore. I'm so sleepy.
Here, give us your hands.
And when she does eventually wake up, it's snowing.
Unusual weather we're having, ain't it?
Before the days of special effects, asbestos was commonly used as artificial snow because of its white and fluffy texture. And it wasn't just used in the movies, it was sold as Christmas decor, sprinkled over gifts under the tree, or smeared over lawns. By the time Victor Fleming directed one of the great films in cinema history, doctors already suspected that asbestos exposure was causing a range of diseases, including cancer. But it didn't come to light in the public eye until the 50s, 60s and 70s.
Okay, now we're going to do one more for...
Coupled with smoking, exposure to asbestos dramatically increases a worker's chance of developing lung cancer.
In 1999, around 100 years after the first documented asbestos death, asbestos was banned in the UK. But there are still places in the world where it is commonly used as a building material, in floor tiles or mixed into cement. Why is this when we know how dangerous it can be? This is a story of how one material has killed thousands of people and continues to do so today. I'm Hannah Devlin. Today on Science Weekly, we're asking why asbestos is still killing people.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jessica Van Horsen. I'm a senior.
To understand why asbestos has become so ubiquitous, I turn to Dr. Jessica Van Horsen. She's a senior lecturer in history at Leeds Beckett University.
And I research the history of the global asbestos industry.
We began by talking about what asbestos is.
It's a fireproof, fibrous mineral that was formed millions of years ago when the continents were colliding and mountain ranges were forming, and intense heat and friction created this. And so in the ground, it looks kind of like a woolly rock, and it really does resemble cotton in a field in some respects.
Why did it become so widely used? What characteristics made it so useful?
I think it's the fact that it can be spun like cotton or added to cotton to make fireproof clothing. The soldiers in the First World War and the Second World War had fireproof uniforms that were spun with asbestos and cotton blended together. And so that was one of the main things. Another thing is that asbestos, not only is it fireproof, but it also, when you add it to things like cement or paint, it makes it stronger. It makes it more durable. And so it was a real investment in the future if you were going to use asbestos. The building would not burn down. It wouldn't. The bridge wouldn't crumble. And everyone would be safe and happy. And that's really, it was that sort of reconstruction effort following the wars that fermented asbestos as being so fundamental.
When did the idea that it might have health consequences first emerge?
The first noted death of asbestos exposure was in 1909, and that was in Britain. But there was an inquiry, and that was the end of that. And no one was really motivated to do anything about it. The next noted death was in 1923 in Rochdale, just outside of Manchester, for an asbestos weaver. And her family was the first to sue an asbestos company for a wrongful death. But again, it was very local, not a big impact on the industry. And the corporations that ran the asbestos mines, asbestos mills, and asbestos business made it their mission to hide what was happening to workers' bodies. And it was a real process of corporate deceit to kind of deny that anything was happening. If you got sick, it was because you were a smoker, not because you had asbestos in your daily life. And it was a really horrific deceit that the corporations were inflicting on the world, actually.
And was there a turning point, a particular case that changed people's minds and that kind of tipped opinion against asbestos?
The turning point was really when it was more than the working class being affected. You know, if it was just a miner or someone working in a mill, we kind of expect miners and mill workers to get sick. And when all of a sudden middle class housewives started thinking maybe their children would be getting sick, then things started to happen. And that was really, it wasn't a particular case, it was just the amount of working class people getting sick and the litigation going in the United States specifically, because you would have whole mills all of a sudden turning around to sue a corporation for occupational health violations. And that sort of slowly trickled out up the class line. And as soon as the middle and upper classes realized that they too were at risk, things started to change.
As early as 1897, an Austrian doctor had attributed some lung problems in one of his patients to the inhalation of asbestos dust. Evidence continued mounting over the next few decades, but a significant piece of the puzzle was published in 1955 by Richard Doll. Richard Doll is well known because of his pioneering research linking smoking with lung cancer and heart disease, but he's less well known for a study published in the British Journal of Industrial Medicine. It was called Mortality from Lung Cancer in Asbestos Workers. In it, he described his findings from 105 autopsies of people exposed to asbestos in a textile factory. He stated, "From the data, it can be concluded that lung cancer was a specific industrial hazard of certain asbestos workers."
It was observed in textile workers in the mid-50s that there was an increased incidence of lung cancer. And at the time, Richard Doll carried out some work and showed that there was a strong association between asbestos and development of lung cancer. And so that led to further interest in the association between asbestos and other lung diseases.
This is Dr. Johanna Feary.
I'm a consultant in occupational lung disease at the Royal Brompton Hospital and an honorary senior lecturer at Imperial College.
So, Jo, could you just tell us what it is about asbestos that's dangerous and what it does to our body?
So, asbestos is a mineral fibre and it fragments into very small particles that we can breathe in or inhale. And because those particles are light and they're small, they can get right down to the bottom of our lungs, to the alveoli. Now, the purpose of the alveoli is where gas exchange takes place, so oxygen moves into our blood and carbon dioxide moves out of our blood back into the lungs, and so we can breathe it out. And asbestos is very durable, so it stays there for a long time. And whilst it's there, it causes damage.
So are we mostly talking about cancer, or is it a mixture of diseases that people end up with?
So the classical disease that asbestos causes is mesothelioma, and that's the one condition that many people know about. That's a form of very malignant, very aggressive cancer that affects the lining of the lung. And we know that there are around 2,500 deaths from mesothelioma in the UK every year. Asbestos is also associated with lung cancer, and it's has a particularly synergistic relationship with smoking. So if you're exposed to asbestos and you smoke, then you're much more likely to get lung cancer. Asbestos exposure is also associated with scarring in the lungs or fibrosis. So there's a condition called asbestosis, where you get hardening and shrinking of the lungs that causes profound breathlessness. And that affects a number of people every year in addition.
And how does it cause the cancer? What is it about it being there that makes cancer more likely to occur?
So like all forms of cancer, we think that the fibres in some way react with the immune system and disrupt the DNA and cause mutations. And then over time, abnormal cells develop and a tumour will develop.
And how long do these diseases take to manifest? Would you feel any ill effects immediately after exposure, or is it many, many years?
So one of the unique things about asbestos is what we call the latency. So there's a long period of time from when you're exposed until you develop the disease. Now, depending on the different disease that you develop, that period of latency will vary. Many people will have been exposed historically to asbestos and will have known about it at the time, particularly people working in manufacturing, for example. But there is a chance that some people will have been exposed and not known about it at the time because it causes no acute symptoms.
How much exposure do you need to increase your risk of these diseases? Do you need to have been sort of working, soaring up ceiling tiles that contain asbestos and having lots of direct exposure, or could it just be living in a property where a bit of asbestos may have come into the air at some stage?
So it's quite difficult to answer that question. We know that you don't need very much exposure to develop a mesothelioma in comparison with asbestosis and lung cancer, where you need much more exposure.
And what are the mortality rates of these diseases? Are they things that chronic diseases that people live with for a long time, or are you very likely to die if you get them?
So the prognosis with mesothelioma is very poor. Without treatment, life expectancy is somewhere between 6 and 12 months. With treatment, it probably goes up to 12 to 18 months.
Rising rates of mesothelioma led the UK government to enforce tighter legislation in the 1980s. And by 1999, all forms of asbestos were banned. However, because of the long latency of the disease, it can take 50 years for mesothelioma to develop. We're seeing a lot of people dying from the disease right now. Johanna says that the number of deaths will peak in 2020 and then decline thereafter. However, many buildings built before 1999, including homes, schools and hospitals, still contain asbestos. And while we're not directly handling it like those working in textiles or construction, could it still pose a risk? And how would we even know it's there? Jessica Van Horsen again.
The UK has not allowed asbestos to be used in homes since 1999. But the homes that still have asbestos in them, which is millions in the UK, councils advise just leaving it in the walls as insulation and not doing much DIY in order to not disturb it.
How would you know if you had asbestos in your home? I mean, how likely is it that, you know, for any given person that it'll just be in there if it was originally used very widely?
It's very likely that you have asbestos in your home. So it started to be included in homes from the 1920s, I would say, in the UK, specifically as insulation, as roofing tiles, as paint, as floor tiles as well. So if your home is aged between the 1920s and 1999, very, very good chance. And even if your home is older than that, there is a very good chance that over the period of its lifespan, it has had asbestos included, probably in the 1950s, possibly early 1960s, because it was seen as so essential. If you had asbestos in your home, your insurance would go down because it was seen as such a great preventative to fires.
Can you tell whether you've got asbestos that is kind of degrading or coming out of your walls? Is there anything that you would see, or is it just based on knowing that it was in there, in the building
materials?
No,
you can tell. Asbestos, it is very distinctive. It's in its manufactured form, it still resembles wool or cotton. It was used as artificial snow in a lot of Christmas activities, actually. And so if asbestos is crumbling in your home, it will look like artificial snow. And so that is a good indication, and you can call people to come and sort that problem out, because that is one thing for sure, that you shouldn't be handling this yourself.
Only last month, the Whitehaven Academy in Cumbria in the north of England was closed after, quote, there had been a disturbance to building materials containing asbestos. And Whitehaven isn't the only school affected. The BBC reports that there are more than 12,000 schools where asbestos is known to be present.
But I don't really think it gets viewed as a health threat that affects ordinary people going about their ordinary everyday lives. And I think it's certainly not viewed as a priority for government action.
After the break, I'll be speaking with Dr. Tom Douglas about whether the asbestos in our homes, schools and hospitals poses a risk to our health, and why some countries continue to use asbestos as a building material today.
And the mantra from the asbestos corporations were, it saves more people than it kills. And so then it's worth the sacrifice, worth the risk.
I'll be right back.
Hi, Jordan Erica Weber here. host of The Guardian's weekly digital culture podcast, Chips with Everything. We don't just look at the latest technological advances, we try and figure out how they'll impact our society. For better,
the level of technology and research, and coming from a disabled man himself, with the experience of what he wanted to see, that is exciting.
Or for worse.
Elsa, the character from Frozen, has been urinated on, where characters are taken to strip clubs. And the whole point is that those videos have been put onto YouTube Kids. They haven't been picked up by the algorithms. And that means that children will start to watch them expecting they're seeing an episode of their favourite show, and instead of seeing things which no child should be seeing at their age.
So, to keep up to date with the latest tech news, subscribe to Chips with Everything, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Science Weekly. I'm Hannah Devlin. Before the break, we looked at how asbestos became so ingrained in our everyday lives. After both world wars, there was a huge pressure to make buildings stronger and fireproof. Asbestos was cheap. It can withstand temperatures of 3,000 degrees C, and when mixed with cement, it makes it stronger and more durable. It was the perfect solution, until it wasn't. With rising death tolls, the UK banned it in 1999. However, as Dr. Jessica Van Horsen highlighted, it's likely to be in many buildings, hospitals and schools today, since much of our infrastructure was built before the turn of the century. But how much of a risk does this pose?
Hello, Tom speaking.
Oh, hi Tom, it's Hannah here from The Guardian.
Hello.
Hi. This was a question I wanted to discuss with Dr. Tom Douglas. He's a senior research fellow in philosophy at the University of Oxford, and he researches asbestos's legacy. He argues that it's not a problem of the past, and that it is still a serious public health threat today.
As a health threat that affects ordinary.
Except it's relatively neglected as a public health message in comparison to obesity, smoking, or drinking.
And in these respects, it seems to me that asbestos is viewed very differently from health threats like smoking or UV exposure or unsafe sex or perhaps even drink driving. But we just haven't had anything similar with asbestos. The rates of asbestos exposure and asbestos-related cancer are actually very high here. The UK is one of the top four countries in the world in terms of asbestos-related cancers, along with Italy, Belgium and Australia. And I don't think that's widely known, so perhaps the kind of lack of awareness here or the lack of a high public profile is especially problematic, but it's fairly typical.
So in the UK, there's very, very limited use of asbestos in new buildings, but many, many buildings, including lots of public buildings like schools and hospitals, still have asbestos embedded in the infrastructure. Does that pose a risk? And is that exposure being managed well?
It certainly does pose a risk because the asbestos-containing materials can disintegrate over time and start to release fibres into the air. There was a recent case actually here in Oxford University where a building was found to have disintegrating asbestos in the covers over the radiators, and the whole building had to be urgently evacuated and the whole psychology department moved to different parts of the university. So disintegration of these materials can be a problem. And then demolition works or renovations can also be a major problem. And we now have a situation actually where a significant proportion of asbestos-related cancers are probably being caused by exposures outside of the workplace, many of which would be from home renovations. So, for example, a recent Australian study found that around 60% of home renovators have probably been exposed to asbestos in the course of their home renovations. So there's certainly an ongoing risk from asbestos currently in schools and workplaces and houses.
And this ongoing risk isn't exclusive to the UK. In fact, production of a type of asbestos known as white or chrysotile is still booming. In 2015, Russia mined 1 million metric tons of it. China, Brazil and Kazakhstan are still extracting this mineral too. And many countries like India, Thailand and Indonesia are importing it and using it as a building material. Even the US allows for some use of asbestos. Given what we know about the dangers of this mineral, is there any way we can justify its use?
No. If it didn't kill people, it is a fantastic mineral. It is a fantastic additive to any construction project that you're undertaking, except that it does kill people.
Jessica Van Horsen again.
A few years ago, asbestos was used in Montreal in a new hospital, and they justified it by saying it's only in the pipes, and they were cement pipes, and so it was used to make sure those cement pipes were strong and were durable. But I think, again, it's that on paper, yes, the pipes are strong and more durable, therefore they'll break less, but they will break. You will still have to put a human in there to do repairs. You'll still have to deal with the wastewater runoff and who gets exposed to that. It's not a material that can be contained. Yes, if it's in your walls, it doesn't, you know, float out of your walls, but people nail photos on their walls, pictures on their walls. They knock walls down when they're doing DIY. It's an impractical idea to say it can be used safely as long as it's not touched, because we're human, we touch everything.
My understanding is that there are alternatives that are far, far safer and almost as good in terms of their other properties. So I'd be very surprised if there's really any justification for ongoing use, considering that we're dealing with a major cancer epidemic.
So why is history repeating itself? Why do countries continue to extract, import, and build with a substance that's known to cause serious health effects? Some say the companies who mine it and those who make and sell the products have a role to play.
I would say that the ongoing use is more to do with the asbestos industry having been very effective in skewing the public discussion about the cancer risks and influencing policy making. We saw that in the developed world, where it took decades from the point at which health risks became clear for any kind of regulation to be put in place. So it took a very, very long time for anything to be done. And now we see that process being reproduced in the developing world, where you see the discussion being influenced. For example, you see in India, proponents of asbestos use arguing that there's no good evidence that it's dangerous in India because there are no studies that have been done on Indians. But it's very implausible that the risks that have been found in other countries wouldn't apply to India as well. So I would say that the ongoing use in the developing world is mostly a result of that influence of the industry rather than of any good justification for using it.
In 2015, there was some hope that this might change. The United Nations held a vote on whether white asbestos should be put on its official hazardous substances list. This is a treaty that ensures that all countries importing the substance are fully informed of its health risks. The other five types of asbestos are already on the list. Only white asbestos remains, and for it to be added to the list, there needed to be a unanimous vote. When the votes were counted, seven countries voted against the proposition: Cuba, India, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Russia, and Zimbabwe. If asbestos continues to be used with abandon, the outlook is pretty dire. People will be exposed, often without knowing, and in a few decades' time, they will suffer the consequences.
I think we have witnessed a huge number of deaths and a lot of disease which has been caused by asbestos. And given all that information that we have at our fingertips now, I really think there is no justification for it being used anywhere in the world.
Jo, do you treat people with these diseases in the clinic, and do your patients feel angry that even though there was knowledge about health risks and asbestos, that they weren't protected?
I think when I see patients who have been given a diagnosis of possible or definite asbestos-related lung disease, whether that's asbestosis or a mesothelioma or a lung cancer, their primary concern is actually about their health there and then. And they've often lived with the knowledge that they've been exposed to asbestos for many years. And they know, because of what's happened to friends and colleagues and family, that they're at increased risk of having asbestos-related lung disease and potentially of dying from it. So I think many patients have lost a lot of sleep and have worried endlessly about their risk of getting these conditions. So by the time I see them, their main concern is about their health and their diagnosis and their prognosis. But I think underneath it all lies a huge amount of anxiety and resentment and anger towards the companies that expose them potentially with some knowledge about the risks associated with asbestos in the past. Well, I think there's going to be another 50 to 60,000 cases of mesothelioma in the next 30 years. So certainly it's not a disease that is going away, and we need to continue to fight and try and find new treatments for it.
If you've got any questions, queries or feedback for us, please get in touch via email, scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Thank you to Johanna Feary, Jessica Van Horsen and Tom Douglas for joining us this week. I'm Hannah Devlin. This is Science Weekly.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.